If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I am Alex, and we're here with a special episode with two very special guests, Joshua Williamson and Tom Riley. Welcome to the podcast, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Very excited to chat about this, and I'm going to give a little bit of a spoiler warning. I believe we're putting this up probably same day as debut for G.I. Joe number 13. It is in comic book shops. Let's say now. I'm just going to throw it out now. It's the beginning of a five-part storyline called The Dreadnought War that is going to be going out bi-weekly from Skybound. And Josh, just to talk to you about this first, I think like back before the series even launched, we talked about one of your big things was that it wasn't just going to be G.I. Joe versus Cobra, Cobra versus G.I. Joe, back and forth. And this year, throwing the Dreadnoughts into the middle of it, causing, you know, mild spoiler, but I think it's out of the solicits and everything, causing Duke and Cobra Commander to kind of have to team up and go on the run. This feels like what you've been leading towards all along. Is that fair to say?
Well, I feel like this is definitely one of the bigger chapter pieces that we've been building to, for sure. Like, we've been doing... originally, this was going to be an earlier story. We thought about doing this earlier, but we were like, we hadn't earned it yet, so we had to push it back. I mean, yeah, this was when we first started talking about Energon Universe years ago, and we were talking about one of the things that I was obsessed with, that thankfully aligned with what Skybound was obsessed with, was the idea that, like, when you watch the cartoon, it was always just like Cobra versus G.I. Joe. That was it. It was just, here's Cobra, here's G.I. Joe. They always fight each other. Even when like the Dreadnoughts got brought in, this was the one that triggered this for me. It was actually, when the Dreadnoughts got brought in, they were just working for Cobra. It was just, there they are. Like, they're being hired to work for Cobra. And I was like, you know, this show would have been, listen, I love the cartoon, but like as an adult looking back at it and you're like, your, you know, storytelling critical brain is like moving things around. I was like, oh, I wish they had done a thing where it was like, they took a break from Cobra for this mini, right? Just had to be just them versus the Dreadnoughts. And I was like, oh yeah, like that's what we should do. I was like, okay, we should make it where there's different factions. It isn't just the two of them. And it was actually Robert said early on where he was like, I don't want to be just flat G.I. Joe versus Cobra. I want to build out these things. And so we started having these conversations about the different factions where it was going to be like, okay, here's G.I. Joe, but there's also Night Force. Like, we're building Night Force out to be something separate that could come into conflict, right? Like, they're being built in secret. And then it was like, okay, we want Cobra Commander here and Destro here, right? We wanted to make sure everyone was, they weren't together. Like, Major Blood is over here doing this, and he might work for Destro, but he doesn't work for Cobra. And it was like, oh, we want the Dreadnoughts to be something completely different out for their own reasons over here, right? So it was like going through and being like, we wanted to set up these pieces in different parts and then gradually show them coming together. But that meant the Dreadnoughts had to be something very separate, which is what we established in Cobra. But yeah, we always knew at some point Dreadnoughts would want revenge on Cobra Commander because of what happened in Cobra, but we didn't want to get it too soon. So I would say, yes, we were building to this, but we were building to a lot of stuff. Yes, so it's like, this is a chapter of a much bigger plan. Like, everything is always rolling and building to something else. It's like every time you think we're building one way, we might be building toward another. Like, everything is just putting these pieces together in unexpected ways. And that was what this one was. We really wanted to establish Dreadnought as a separate force. So it wasn't just G.I. Joe versus Cobra all the time. So with this, but then it was like, I don't know, it was, I could see the organic of how my brain was working, where it was like, oh, Dreadnoughts want to kill Cobra Commander. Okay, we do a story about that, where it's Cobra Commander by himself, but it's like, but it's still a G.I. Joe book, so G.I. Joe needs to be in it. What if Duke is the only person that can save him? Oh, okay, here we go. It was like, you know what I mean? Like, that's how it started pulling together. But yeah, this was one we were all very excited about from day one, that we knew we were going to do this particular arc. And yeah, I'm really proud of it. I love it. Did you read issue 13 yet? You?
I did. I thought it was great. Cool. And Tom, I did want to ask you about your take on the Dreadnoughts. You've been away for a little while. You were on for the first arc. We haven't seen you for a couple of issues. I imagine you haven't been twiddling your thumbs. How much of that was preparing?
He dived right into this.
Yeah.
Because of the nature of this being double shipped, mm-hmm. I think I started the next arc after I finished my first one, like a day later, something like that. I started doing preliminary work, and very fun to design the Dreadnoks. I like all those dirty, grungy characters like that. And I had to come up with a bunch of like just kind of throwaway characters and had to figure out like a visual language for kind of how they would all be dressed. These like weird Florida rednecks and stuff. And I took a lot of inspiration from the 80s toys for these guys. I actually went out and I bought this bad boy.
Who'd you get? Oh, dude. Yes. I think
I had to. Because I got to draw this thing, and I have no idea how it's put together, so I can just take pictures of it.
Yeah,
Draw it when I need to, until I figure it out.
For anybody listening, what is the name?
Is this audio only?
Well, yeah. We'll probably put up the video too, but we go out as an audio podcast. So it's like a cycle thing. I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with the toy.
It's the Dreadnought cycle.
The Dreadnought cycle.
Yeah, okay, yeah. There we go. It comes
very creative name.
Yeah, it's funny, every once in a while, the toys will really help us, because there is like a thing where there was a scene in issue 16. Tom, you don't know about this, actually. There's a scene in issue 16 with the Thunder Machine. And one of the editors at Skybound was like, I don't understand what you're trying to say here. And so I literally had to go take a picture of what was happening to the Thunder Machine. Oh, it's in the script. You saw it. It's in the script.
I saw it in the script. Okay, so I would not have known that.
That picture was because, Sean was also like, I don't understand what you're trying to say. He thought I was saying something completely different. And I was like, no, this is what happens. And I had to like take the toy and take a picture of it to be like, this is exactly what's happening here. Is this? So the toys come in handy is what we're saying.
Absolutely. They absolutely do.
Yeah. I mean, Tom, if you had to start immediately for the double shipping, what about you, Josh? Like, you have a lot going on. What does do to your schedule to handle something like that?
Well, it's interesting. I've been dealing with this, I got a lot of practice with Flat because Flash was double ship. And it was like, there were times where, Howard Porter could only do like 6 issues a year. So it was like for Howard, I would be writing for Howard almost a year in advance. Like I would be writing for him almost a full year out. And so that meant a lot of planning. I didn't know what I was doing a year from that moment. Right. Like, it also made it a little hard to pivot at times, but I was like, I had to know what I was doing. And so with this, thankfully, because we have this big plan, I knew what these were. So I wrote 13 probably before I wrote issue 7.
Oh, wow.
Definitely issue 8. Cause like 7, I have to bounce around. So it's like, even now, I have to write ahead, So it's like, Tom will finish Dreadnought and then he's going to dive in. I'm not going to say what issue it is, but Tom knows. But it's like, I know what issue he's doing next. So that means even though that isn't for a while, I'm going to have to write that one technically next. But thankfully, I'm actually pretty far ahead on the book right now. So it kind of helps.
You can take a couple weeks before you finish that too, after I'm done with this. I won't be worried if you take a couple weeks.
You're like, give me a minute. It's the holidays, please.
Doing something like that, does that allow for any improvisation between, since you do have what's locked in past the point you're currently at?
It's yes and no. There are times it's interesting. We were talking about some of the other interviews already where it's like, I always feel like not just comics, but storytelling in general, a lot of times is problem solving and it is like puzzles and stuff like that. So it's weird. There are times where I have changed my mind about something in the middle of something. And now it's like, okay, how do I still make this work with what I've already written? And there have been a couple times where I've had to go in and be like, oh, I have to change a couple scenes in a script. We go back in, we let somebody know like, hey, we're making this change. But we thankfully plan, we really do plan far out. And it's like, because we plan so far out, and we also plan in shorter arcs, we don't do really long arcs. It allows me to have a little bit of room for pivoting, a little bit of room, but it's hard. I can't make like crazy, like, well, this character's going to die in this issue. I've decided like that I can't do because Tom might have already drawn them someplace else, So it's interesting. Like, you probably won't see it, but there are kind of weird tricks that I'm doing that allow me to have some room to breathe. That's the most I can kind of say to you about it. But it's like, there are some tricks that I'm doing as I'm working, because I do recognize there are times where I might have to change my mind on something. I might be in the middle of writing an issue, and then be like, oh shit, I should have done this instead. So I've definitely had to like go in a little bit, but for the most part, because we have such a big plan and because everything has to be cleared by Hasbro, we don't want to like surprise Hasbro with something. we definitely do outline out pretty good. Like, there's a thing at the end of issue 24 that I totally changed my mind about, but thankfully I haven't written 25 yet. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, because I'm changing my mind about something in 24 that is going to impact 25. It just like will impact 25. Thankfully, because I haven't written 25 yet, I can do that. Even though it's like, you know, it will kind of change a couple of things. Anyway, yes. It's a lot of planning, man. It's a lot of
work. Yeah, I know. I can tell.
Yeah, yeah.
Tom, I wanted to ask you, other than the Dreadnoughts, your two main characters, at least in issue 13, and I assume it kind of blows out from there, are, like we're talking about, Duke and Cobra Commander. There's a big evolution from where you left them in 6 facing off at each other to where they are in issue 13. So what was your approach to each of them? And you probably get this a lot, but particularly for Cobra Commander, somebody who has a metal mask and is an inscrutable character anyway, how do you show emotion there? How do you show what his intention is through the art?
Mostly through body language, different poses and stuff. You can tell a lot about how a character's feeling without having to see their face, just based on how they're posed. What am I trying to think here? That is basically it. Acting is not just the facial features. It's the whole body. And you can really push someone's emotions just based on the pose and just really making sure to exaggerate it and make it readable. And it's fun.
Yeah. And then we do with Cobra Commander for you is that we make sure that like there are times where he doesn't say anything, you know, like in issue 15, there are parts where him and Duke are talking where it's like, because obviously, you know, it's Cobra Commander. You just have him not say something. Like you have him, because I always feel like the way we try to make Cobra Commander now is that he's really thinking about everything. Like he's very thoughtful. And so there are times where it's like, he'll take a second to respond and we just give Tom room to do that. Like it's not, you know, like sometimes as simple as that. It's just like, don't, like what Tom was saying, it's like you have all this body language, but sometimes that body language is like, just have the dude not say something. Like it, you can feel the presence, the air, if you give him that room to do it, you know. And Tom is really awesome at, like, one thing I love that Tom does, and I really do love that you do this, is you add panels sometimes and make a beat land properly. And that's what you do a lot with Cobra Commander, is he'll add a panel or two just to give that guy room to breathe, to have that body language.
Yeah. I really should not do that, but I do.
I know, but you do it and it's great.
Well, I think
I'll never stop, but I think like, God, why am I doing that? Why am I adding these like
not to interject panels between the two of you in your relationship, but that's the joy of comics, right? It's the give and take. Okay. It's not the writer saying something or the artist saying something. It's both of you saying something at the same time.
Sometimes you'll get a writer who'll be like, why'd you add that panel? It's got this many panels in it. Like it's much more of a collaborative experience here.
Yeah, I want you to have that freedom to do what's best for the story. Like that's we're just trying to tell a story. And so whatever we got to do to do that, like that's the, and I, my only nitpick sometimes, not with you, but when people take away panels, I get like, oh, why?
Or no, you know, but you've never taken away panels.
No, you definitely have added
that. If I was smart, I'd be taking away panels, but I'm adding panels.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about another collaboration, though, because, Tom, I love your pencils. They're gorgeous, particularly in this issue. There's so much great stuff going on. But Jordi Belair's colors are also fantastic. And I'd love to just hear a little bit about the coordination between the two of you. Like, is there an indication that you're giving her of, okay, I want a little bit more of a flat wash on this page, or is it just letting her go hog wild?
This is what I do. I turn in the pages, and then I just take my hands off the keyboard, and I just let her do it.
The only thing with Jordi, the only two things we ever tapped into, the only two, I guess we'll call it like that kind of note, like preliminary note thing, is the only time I ever do anything that's color related in the scripts is this is the time of day it is. It's like night or day. Like I tell Jordi night or day, or like, are we getting close? Like, especially because in Dreadnought War pretty much all takes place in like 24 hours, the whole 5 issues. It's like morning of issue 13 to the morning of the next day, pretty much, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like getting that information to her of like, this is the time differences and stuff. And then early on in issue 1 of Duke, she did a thing where it was like the color red really represented danger, obviously. So it was like when Duke walked in on the murder scene, it was all red. And so she has maintained that at times where it's like red, you know, she'll do these pops of red during that. That's, and I remember when she did it in the first
G.I. Joe, now there's like yellow and orange in there too. Yeah. And the color holds are red. And when there's like high action scenes, she'll flip that switch, kind of like the Kill Bill switch.
Yeah.
Where it goes like black and white, stuff like that.
So that's really the extent of it. I think it was early on we saw her do that and we were like, oh, that's awesome. Do that again. And that has been really it. And she's really great. And truly, I was thinking about this yesterday because I was looking at the colors yesterday for an issue. And I was like, I've actually never met Jordy in person.
Oh,
we live in the same. We live in the same town. We just never met in person. We always miss each other. Like James Tynion was here 2 months ago. That might have just been a month ago. Time is weird. he was just here and he hung out with her. And I couldn't come out to like hang out with people. I was like, you know, family stuff. Things happen. Mm-hmm. But I was like, that was what I was like. Damn it! Like I wanted to go actually meet her in person. I just never been able to. But yeah, she's great. She's awesome. She really definitely is like the third partner on this book and really adds a lot to it.
This is another structural thing I wanted to ask you about that I really appreciated. There's a bunch of recap pages in this issue, which I thought was really nice and helpful. Is that something?
I thought that was cool too. I hadn't seen that before.
That was me. I you know, with this issue, with issue 13, you know, it's like we're a year in and, you know, comics have lifespans, you know, it's like every comic in some ways like is fighting the clock every time, you know, and you have what's called standard attrition in titles. And it's like with this book, it's like we want to make sure we're really proud of the work we're doing. And we want to make sure that if you haven't been reading or if you maybe read the first couple of issues and stepped off or haven't read the book at all or whatever, that you could pick issue 13 up and have the information you need. And so it was the first time we've actually done a recap page in the series. And I don't think we're going to do it again. We might do it in like 25, mm-hmm. but it's like, cause that should be a year from now, but it's not because of double shift. But you know, it's like, one of the things that's really important to us about this book is making sure it's accessible as possible. And then really has clear storytelling. So people can just pick it up. Like that's how I feel about a lot of comics. I just want to make sure people are able to pick it up and dive into the story. And there's Scott talks about this a lot lately. Snyder does a lot where he is like, we have to remember that people, there's a lot going on and there's a lot of books and people are reading these things a month apart. Mm-hmm. Like you have to make sure they're able to catch up the information they need so they can enjoy the story, whatever tricks you have to do to remind people of the story you're telling, whether it's not just plot, but the emotion of a story. And so with the recap pages, I went to Skybound and I was like, can we do something? Can we do something? Like, it was actually a little bit like, I remember when we did issue 6, there's a part really early on issue 6 where like Duke and Cobra Commander talk for a moment. And it's this 2-page spread that Tom did. That's awesome. That's kind of a recap of everything that had happened up to that point. And yeah. I remember when I finished, I had finished 13 was done and I had read it because 13, I feel like 13 was done like a long time ago. So I was like, when I read 13, when it was done, I was like, you know what? I wish I had done something here like that. And so I went to Skype and I was like, can I add a 2-page recap page in here? This is what it is. So if somebody hasn't read anything, they did not read 1 through 12, or they decided to read this one, or maybe they didn't read some of the stuff in between, just giving you the crucial bits of information so you could just dive into the story. So yeah, I went to Skybound and I was like, can we do some kind of recap? Because I want to make sure people haven't read the book in a bit, they can pick it back up. You know, that's all. Yeah.
This is a similar structural thing, but blowing it out even a little bit more. This is very much from my outside perspective. It almost feels like we're hitting a phase 2 of the Energon universe. You got the Dreadnought War kicking off that we're talking about right now. You got a new team on Transformers. Is that part of the plan? Is it like phase 2 of Energon, or is it just fortuitous coincidence?
I definitely would not call this phase 2 just because I feel like I know where the marker is, where that actually is true.
So okay.
I would not say that's what this is. No, I mean, we knew we were all kind of doing, because again, we all knew we were doing essentially like war kind of things, like Dreadnought War, you know, they're doing the war storyline and Void Rivals. We know this stuff. We just kind of knew.
Quintesson War.
Things. Yeah, the Quintesson War. We knew all these pieces that we were doing, so we knew this was going to be kind of a marker moment for Energon, but in no way would I call it phase 2. It is interesting because I know that with Robert coming on Transformers, that definitely does like change things over there. But you can tell what Robert is doing is he's really trying to pick up what Daniel had done and run with it versus like, you know, it's not one of those things where you come into a new book with a new creative team and they're like, whole fucking new door, whole new direction. You know, it's not like that. And I we're definitely not in that right now, but we do talk a lot about these things and we do recognize this is like a moment where all the books are kind of doing something at the same time, all the sort of a similar thing. But yeah, I don't think I would use phase two as a phrase for this, is because I'm like, just stay tuned. Because when that happens, you will know what happened. There okay. will be no question. You'll be like, oh, that's what that is. Yeah.
I want to ask you a couple of specifics, starting, Tom, with you. In the book, we get this great teaser at the end. It's not a teaser, but like plot point, where you're basically getting like a Mad Max-style chase in the desert. When you're doing something like this, and this touches on something we talked about earlier, but you got all these insane vehicles, but at the same time, you've got a desert, which is big and flat and open. As an artist, where is the challenge there? Where does your preference lie? Would you rather have the hyper detailed things, the flat expanse, a little bit of both? How do you lead?
Well, it is both. the hard thing is probably drawing upwards of 30 cars. Cars are terrible to draw. That's mm-hmm. just some inside baseball. Cars, no one likes drawing cars. And I've got to draw like 30 of them, and I got to make them up. I got to make up interesting designs for all the cars. But I can't make them too interesting, because then they'll take too long to draw. And like, it's a balancing act. And having them all on like a flat surface seems pretty sweet, but there's nothing to hide those cars. You've got mm-hmm. to draw them all. You know, if it's like a background with objects in it, you can sometimes artfully hide stuff. You can't really do that in the desert. It's all out there. So
what you're saying is that I should have given you way more backgrounds to draw.
No, I'm not saying that. Not saying that. And you can use the vehicles to obscure other vehicles and make a cool yeah. kind of mosaic composition and stuff like that. It is not easy to do, and I don't know, you know, but I knew it wasn't going to be easy to do. I'm not trying to take the easy way out here or anything. I feel like I'm trying to take pretty big swings with these sequences that I'm drawing. So
we knew this arc was going to be really vehicle heavy, this one in particular, because it was early on. We're like, oh, this is the Mad Max arc, this one right now.
And yeah, again, a lot of there's all the toys. I can look at the Dreadnought cycle and I have the reference for that. There's a couple other vehicles in there that have toys that it's a little bit easier for me to... Yeah. draw those, because I got the reference. And a lot of times finding like the right sort of reference angles and stuff for yeah. vehicles, it can take up the most time, because well, I don't know how to
you draw has less vehicles in it, you know what you're buying next, and there's not really gonna be a lot of vehicles in that issue.
What's sick is I'm starting to kind of like it now. It's kind of fun, so it's no big deal.
That's funny. Yeah,
I've got like Stockholm syndrome.
Josh, you mentioned that this takes place over the course of 24 hours. I don't know how much you actually want to talk about this, but it's very focused in the scope in this first issue. You got mostly Cobra Commander and Duke as the main characters. You got some Cobra machinations going on the side, but you're very specific about taking a lot of the rest of the Joes and being like, yeah, they're off in Chicago. They're off doing this thing. Is it going to blow out to more characters as we go on, or is it this very like midnight run with G.I. Joe type thing?
Tom, do we have more characters show up in this?
It's tough to say.
We have a lot.
Yeah.
This is not just those two dudes in the desert. Okay. Like, no. There's a lot of stuff going on. Like, we already teased it in New York that, like, Road Pig shows up. Like, you'll see. It definitely becomes, I feel bad for Tom is what I'm trying to say to you. Like, it definitely becomes, listen, it's called a war.
All right.
It's a war. You can't have it be where it's just like it's desert. Like, a lot of stuff happens in this, you know, and you'll see as the series goes. It's not... It's a G.I. Joe comic, you know? So it's like, I didn't want to be just the two of them. And I wanted to make sure that we earned that name of war. So you'll see it definitely. Yeah. It gets really huge. Like, I think it's the first two issues are very action packed. The third issue is a little quieter. I think it's a little bit more of a calm before the storm. And then the fourth and fifth parts are really fucking bonkers. Like, it explodes. Yeah. A lot of stuff happening, and it has like a major impact on what happens after. So it's like a lot of, it's not just these two dudes. it gets pretty crazy. Like, you'll be,
yeah, it ramps up.
You'll be shocked, I think, and the amount of nuttiness that happens here.
Here's one that I'm sure you're going to be able to answer. If there are a lot of characters showing up, are we potentially going to see Zartan show up in some fashion?
I don't know either.
I feel like you guys should know. You create.
No, but it's funny. Like, you know this. We've had this conversation with other people. It's like, yeah, we have a plan for every character.
Yeah.
Like, every single character we have a plan for. We know pretty much where we're going to drop them. I think there's like maybe two or three that I'm like, I'm not sure yet, but you know, it's like, they don't fit what we're doing. So it's okay. Not fit right. I fit right now. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a couple strategic reasons to move things around. I personally love Zartan. He's one of my favorite, like absolute favorite characters. So, I mean, you're going to see Zartan eventually. It's just a matter of when, you know? So
yeah. Josh says that when he makes the plans, he'll change his mind all the time. So I don't know what happens either way. You know, I get surprised a lot.
Firefly was originally in Duke Number One, and then we took him out because it didn't fit the story. And also, we don't want to have a thing where characters are just introduced as, like, you know, set dressing.
He was like pushing a crate in the background or something.
Yeah, no, he was just standing there. They're like, no, this guy's cool. And I'm like, well, I love him. I want to write him. And they're like, this isn't writing him, though.
Looking at his watch in the background.
Yeah, he literally was in the background of a scene. And they were like, you can't do it that way. And I'm like, you're right. Okay, fine. Anyway, yeah, so Zartan is awesome.
I'm going to have to wrap you guys up in a second, but I will ask, it sounds like you're on at least through 25. Do you feel like you're on longer than that at this point?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, we talked out like years of story. Like, I have a much longer plan than that. I mean, 25 is actually the beginning of a story. Mm-hmm. It isn't the end of a story, it's the beginning of a story. So, yeah, we definitely have stuff going out, like, far.
Okay, so Robert Kirkman isn't going to come in and steal that book like he did Transformers.
No. I don't think Robert has the time to do that. There's times where he wants to write stuff, but he doesn't have the time for that. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm very excited to see how this arc goes. It is an awesome kickoff with this issue. Sounds like there's going to be some crazy twists and turns, and I'm really looking forward to it. Thank you guys so much for taking the time to talk. Let's go.